Are we heading for a Russia-NATO showdown? According to the former Russian president Dmitry Medvedev, a full-scale war between Russia and NATO would leave Moscow little choice but to deploy its nuclear assets. And then we have reports over the past 48 hours in the town of Avdiivka, which I'm going to say wrong throughout this interview, an area that has been heavily fortified over the last decade by NATO forces, really a stronghold, is now surrounded and Ukrainians are surrendering and fleeing. Is this the last gasp of the Ukrainian military? We wanted to ask former UN weapons inspector and former U.S. Marine Scott Ritter about this. Avdiivka. Help me out here, Scott.
Avdiivka.
All right, I've got it. Okay. I'll let you say it for the rest of this interview. So
no problem.
I wanted you to tackle this part first. Let's talk about this battle here. We're seeing reports that there is sort of a massive Russian offensive about to be launched here, attacks in Kiev and attacks around here. What do you make of this?
Well, what we're looking at is what I've been talking about now for some time. We're looking at the collapse of the Ukrainian military, their ability to maintain combat cohesion. You know, the key player here is the lack of artillery. The Ukrainians had received a tremendous amount of artillery weapons, including modern, some of the most modern Western 155 millimeter, I think the L-52 caliber weapons, which have a long range and they have accuracy. So the Ukrainians use these, in a very professional manner through counter battery warfare, et cetera. They were able to disrupt Russian artillery, prevent Russia from massing their artillery the way they would normally do doctrinally. And otherwise maintain sort of an equilibrium on the battlefield, because Russia's casualty averse. They're not in the business of, you know, giving the Ukrainians opportunities to kill a large number of Russians. And so Russia was compelled to disperse command and control, disperse assets, disperse logistics. And this had an effect of slowing down the Russian operations. Ukraine's out of ammunition now. They aren't able to do this anymore. They tried to compensate using drones, swarms of these the first-person view drones, these kamikaze drones. But you know, Russia adapted, because a drone requires a drone operator who requires a means of communicating with the drone. And what the Russians have done is they've gone hunting for antennas. They've gone hunting for drone operators, and they've annihilated Ukrainian drone operators. And so now Ukraine has nothing. They have no artillery. They have no meaningful drone support. Which means now Russia can bring its artillery together and it can suppress Ukrainian defenses in a very efficient manner and then follow through with, coordinated assaults. And that's what we're seeing. They've cracked the Avdiivka nut, so to speak. It's this one of the most heavily fortified, if not the most heavily fortified positions of the Ukrainians. Since 2014, the Ukrainians have been digging in underground bunkers, concrete, reinforced concrete, the whole thing, strong points, mutually supporting. It's sort of like the Siegfried line and the Maginot line all rolled into one. It's gone. The Russians have defeated it. The Russians are occupying it as we speak. They're slaughtering the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians who remain are in basements waiting to surrender. The battle's over. And now once, you know, when I say the battle's over, you know, it's like Stalingrad on January 30th. The battle was over, January 30th, 1943. A handful of Germans hung out until like February 2nd, February 8th, but the battle was over. Well, there'll be pockets of resistance of diehard Ukrainians who are going to hole up and require the Russians to come in and, you know, dig them out. Yeah, but the battle's over. It's done. It's finished. They've lost Avdiivka. And in doing so, they've had a giant hole ripped into their lines, because the key to a fortress is that it's impenetrable, but the Russians have now penetrated it. And behind the fortress, there isn't a follow-on spot. So this is the beginning of the end. The Russians will now push through Avdiivka. The Ukrainians will be compelled to divert reinforcements that they don't have. It's not like they're sitting on a whole bunch of brigades that have yet to be deployed. They've deployed their best brigades to Avdiivka to try and stop the Russians. It didn't work. They're dead. So now they're going to be putting others. And in order to do that, they're going to have to steal the units from other places on the front lines where the Russians are advancing. Every day, the Russians are biting off a chunk, 500 meters there, a kilometer here, 5 kilometers there, along the entire front. And they're just pushing. And what you're seeing now is collapse. And eventually, the line will burst, and the Ukrainians will have to pull back to the Dnieper River defensive position. And, Russia will have effectively won the war. Where Russia decides to stop their advance is still a political question. I think the feeling is that they are going to go on to Odessa. They are going to take Mykolaiv. They are going to take Dnipropetrovsk. They are going to take Kharkov. But this will happen. These four cities have no chance now, because when the Ukrainian military collapses, there's nothing that's going to stop the Russian advance. So that's the stage of the war that we're at right now. This is literally the beginning of the end.
And yet the West is in denial about this. The Wall Street Journal allowing foreign leaders to write in their opinion pages. Olaf Scholz, the Chancellor of Germany, writing an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal calling for more weapons and support for Ukraine, saying Ukraine faces a weapon shortage unless the West steps up now and sends more munitions into the country, that Ukraine will lose.
But Ukraine is losing. It's not will lose, Olaf. They've lost. And here's a news flash for Olaf, the rest of the NATO members, the United States. There's nothing you can do to stop this Russian victory. There's nothing that can be done. Let's hypothetically say the United States releases $64 billion. Understand that the vast majority of that money would be diverted to American defense industry to produce weapons. The production of the weapons takes months, if not years. The Ukrainians are collapsing right now. Unless we were able to magically produce thousands of artillery pieces, millions of artillery shells, and then turn them over to a Ukrainian army capable of receiving them with highly trained troops and employing them on the battlefield, there's literally nothing we can do. You would have to create an entirely new Ukrainian army, like we did in the past. People need to understand that this isn't the first Russian victory over Ukraine. Russia destroyed the original Ukrainian army in the spring and summer of 2022. It was only by the infusion of $48 billion and NATO training up more brigades that Ukraine was able to stay on the battlefield. Then Russia destroyed that army in the battles where the Ukrainians launched their counteroffensive in Kharkov and on the right bank of Kherson. That was destroyed. They built another army that got destroyed in Bakhmut. They built a bigger army that got destroyed in the counteroffensive. And now there's nothing left. So the Ukrainians have a lot of troops. They're big numbers, but they needed those numbers to offset against the Russian, superiority in tactics and in weaponry and, operational skill. Now the Ukrainians are losing numbers, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 men a month are being lost, and there's nothing replacing them. This is why the debate inside Ukraine today is, how do we get 500,000 men that quick? You can't. You can't. Russia mobilized 300,000 back in 2022, and it took them months to mobilize them, equip them, train them so they could be an effective fighting force. How do you expect the Ukrainians now to produce 500,000 men overnight? They literally can't. And anybody they get will be thrown in the battlefield like the Volkssturm were thrown in by the Nazis at the end of Nazi Germany in the final months of 1945, only to die because they can't fight. They can't stand up against a professional military, which is what Russia has. So it is literally all over. Game, set, match. The only thing left is the dying, and there will be a lot of dying. I always remind people that the bloodiest month for the United States in World War II in the European theater wasn't June 1944 D-Day. It wasn't December 1944, the Battle of the Bulge. It was April 1945, literally the last month of the war when Germany was defeated. A lot of fighting remains. A lot of Russians will die, but a lot more Ukrainians are dying. But there's nothing the West can do to stop this. Olaf Scholz can write all the op-eds he wants. They don't produce artillery shells. it's over.
I'll get you out of here on this, Scott, which is about the leadership. And we saw Victoria Nuland showing up there last week and under the mysterious circumstances. And now we have this report of a apartment complex in Dubai for $17 million that apparently Zelensky had purchased at the end of December through a proxy. Will he live out his days in Dubai? There was some suggestion he would wind up in Florida, which I imagine there'd be a revolt in Florida if that happens. But really at the heart of it is the leadership question inside of Kiev right now. Who's running the show? How long until Zelensky is there, or is he pretty much gone as it is?
Well, you know, we've all heard the rumors that Zelensky tried to fire Zaluzhny last week, and Zaluzhny said no. Now, remember, we call Ukraine this wonderful democracy. And a key aspect of democracy is the civil-military relationship where the civilians are supreme. And so when a civilian leader tells a recalcitrant general, you have to go, the only answer is, yes, sir, I resign. Look, the United States has its own history in this regard. Go back to the Civil War. Look at General McClellan and Abraham Lincoln. McClellan thought he could run the war better than Lincoln, and Lincoln ended up firing him, and McClellan stepped aside. Douglas MacArthur and Harry Truman in the Korean War. Douglas MacArthur was convinced that he alone had the solution, that Harry Truman didn't know what he was doing. But when Harry Truman finally said, enough is enough, you're fired, MacArthur stepped aside. We have a situation now where Zelensky has been exposed as not only corrupt, but incompetent. He's a man who has interfered with the course of this war, insisting that the Ukrainians stick it out in Bakhmut, losing 70,000 men there, insisting on this counteroffensive, losing 90,000 men, and now insisting on Avdiivka, this battle, defending to the bitter end, losing we don't know how many, probably 50, 60,000 Ukrainians. And Zaluzhny is saying, I would have done this differently. I would have done this differently. Now, Zelensky's trying to blame Zaluzhny, to make Zaluzhny the fall guy. Zaluzhny's not having any of that. Zaluzhny has said, I can not only run the military better than Zelensky, I'm a better leader. He is a political challenger to Zelensky. That's why there's no elections, because Zelensky knows that there were elections and Zaluzhny threw his hat in the ring, Zelensky would lose. So Zelensky canceled the elections. When he tried to fire Zaluzhny, not only did Zaluzhny say no, but the military backed Zaluzhny up, saying we're not going to allow this. Victoria Nuland traveled to Kiev to sort this out, because this would be devastating for the United States if there were a coup d'etat in Kiev. How do you call it a democracy when a junta is now in charge? Everything would fall apart. Congress could never pass the money that they're trying to pass for Ukraine. And so we're in a situation now where they're trying to figure out how to unravel this political disaster. We talked about the military collapse of Ukraine, but I've always said that accompanying that will come the societal collapse and the political collapse. And we're looking at the political collapse right now. You know, the question now is, can Zelensky convince Zaluzhny to resign and step aside without any drama? And the answer right now is, we don't know. We don't know. The United States is putting pressure on that. But if he doesn't, then the question is, what do you do about Zelensky? Do you let him force this issue so that there is a coup, which makes it impossible to support Ukraine? Or does Zelensky step aside? Zelensky is an actor. And for the last 2 years, he's been playing the part in a melodrama, the narrative, the script of which is written by the West. But the problem is, he forgot that he's just an actor. He's like an actor who suddenly believes he is the character that he's playing, that he is this Superman, that he is this Winston Churchill, that he can do anything he wants. And he's lost focus. I think what Nuland did and what the Americans continue to try to do is to remind Zelensky that he's playing a role and that the series has been canceled and it's time for him to step aside. If he doesn't, I don't think he's going to live in that Dubai apartment. I don't think he's going to live in Miami. I think he's going to die in a courtyard in Kiev, gunned down by soldiers who feel betrayed by this man who has literally destroyed their country.
You're not the only one saying that right now, by the way. Scott Ritter, thank you so much, as always, for your insights. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I really hope you enjoyed watching this video. You know, YouTube thinks that you'll actually like this next video right here. It's personalized based on your own viewing habits. So if you watch the video, please leave a comment. Let us know what you think about it. And we will see you next time, everyone.